Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. One year ago today, thousands overran the U.S. Capitol.
We were just told that there has been tear gas in the rotunda, and we're being instructed to each of us get a gas mask that are under our seats.
Supporters of President Trump violently attempting to stop the certification of the 2020 presidential election.
I saw the Capitol Police doing some heroic things, but the fact that they were having to do that because the president and his supporters were egging on these crowds is the thing I think that just gets most of us.
Today, President Biden, while standing in Statuary Hall, where the insurrectionists battled police and surged into the federal legislative building, railed against President Trump and the attack on democracy.
The president had not just lost an election, he tried to prevent the peaceful transfer of power as a violent mob breached the Capitol. But they failed.
Tonight we examine what has happened to America since the riot at the Capitol and where we are now. My guests are Dr. Marcia Chatelain, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and author of Franchise, The Golden Arches in Black America, and Dr. Niambi Carter, political science professor at Howard University. Lines are open as we talk about this critical, historic day. Give us a call. If you have a comment, if you have a question, if you have some input at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I invite you to tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Dr. Chatelain, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
It's a pleasure to chat about this very important topic.
And Dr. Carter, always good to have you on the line to talk about political things. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Harold. Good to talk with you.
Let me start with you, Dr. Chatelain. What do you believe was the significance of today? As I started the newscast, a year ago, we had a different president. There was a different America. Do you agree with that characterization?
Well, I think that a year ago, we definitely did have a different president. But, you know, I think the question still lingers whether we have a different nation, because the types of groups that were motivated to storm the Capitol, the kind of rhetoric about grievance, about white supremacy, about taking back the country, you know, that remains. The question is how tapped in that element of the nation is to Washington, D.C. And so I think that, you know, one year in, there's still a lot of anxiety and a lot of fear that the groups that mobilized because Trump called them over, could they return to the nation's capital and be motivated by someone else to act in the same way?
Dr. Carter, President Biden's speech has been characterized today as one of the most significant, if not the most significant, of his political career. Here is just a taste of what he said today, and I want you to kind of dive into your thoughts about not just this, but some of the other things that you heard the president say today.
The former president of the United States of America has created and spread a web of lies about the 2020 election. He's done so because he values power over principle.
Go right ahead.
Well, he also said that this was holding a dagger to the throat, I think, of American democracy or something to that effect. I think this was a significant speech because we've never heard, I think, Joe Biden be so forceful. I mean, he did not equivocate. He absolutely said what happened on January 6th should never have happened. And he laid the blame squarely at the feet of Donald Trump, who he didn't name, which I think is also significant. He never said his name. But, of course, we know who he's talking about. But I think, you know, Joe Biden has a reputation for being very conciliatory and trying to be very measured, almost like doing this sort of both-sides-ism, right?
But he didn't do that today. And I think in part because the stakes are so high, we cannot afford to say, well, these people thought they were defending democracy, so maybe it wasn't so bad. No, what this was a treasonous act, and we need to call it as such. It was an act of domestic terror, and we need to call it as such. All of this attempt to reshape this because these were good people, quote unquote, I think it's partly why we are here a year later with very little in terms of resolution and still seeing many of the people who were there on that day, many of whom were very well resourced, walk away with misdemeanors and no kind of confinement or anything that looks like punishment for what they did on that day. I think the gravity of that event has been underplayed, and not just by the American public, but also political elites. You look at Condoleezza Rice. She said we should all just move on. This was, you know, a month or so ago. It had not even been a full year since this event happened. We don't even have a full reckoning of what happened, yet you have so many saying, you know, there's nothing to see here. So I think Joe Biden coming out and being so forceful was an important reminder about what was at stake, what is at stake, and why January 6th was such an issue. And similarly, Kamala Harris's statement also sort of set the stage for saying why and making the case for why January 6th was such a terrible event and not something that we should treat as sort of pro forma.
Speaking of Vice President Harris, one of the things that is being reported late today, Dr. Chatelain, is that then Vice President-elect Kamala Harris was at the Democratic National Committee headquarters when a pipe bomb was found there on this same day, this being reported today only about an hour or so ago, and that she had to be evacuated by her Secret Service team. It's been a year since this event has happened, and yet we are still finding out new information about just how serious this is. From the perspective of Black America, do you think there is a sense that we are fed up, or do you believe that there is a sense of malaise about January 6th? What do you think?
Well, I think it's, you know, from the perspective of Black Americans who watched and I think, you know, really sounded the alarm the second that Donald Trump went down that escalator in Trump Tower and started running his mouth about running for president, that there was something that was going to erupt in the nation. And I think that it's hard to say that in some ways that January 6th was a culminating moment, because we know that hundreds of thousands of lives were lost because of the handling of the COVID crisis. We know the number of people who were brutalized by police who were reinforced by the Trump administration's, you know, pro-police brutality stance during the George Floyd summer. So I think, you know, I don't think malaise is the right word, and I don't think, you know, people are particularly numb, but I think that there is a realization that the ante was always being raised with Trump in terms of a normalization of white violence that was born out of white grievance, and that this was maybe the big display. But I think, you know, I think we've seen what the implications are of this rhetoric and this, you know, tone, as well as the fact that, you know, the people who participated in this wanted to make a point about reclaiming their country. And I think for Black Americans, we have heard that language every step of the way with every sign of progress, whether it's the election of Black mayors or the election of a Black president.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are examining what has happened to America since the insurrection, the riot, the attack at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th, 2021. And where are we now? If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. Let's talk to Walter. Walter calling from Northeast D.C. Walter, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Happy New Year to you, Mr. Fisher. How you doing?
I'm doing just fine. Happy New Year to you as well.
And to your guests. It hasn't changed, especially when you look back at the Oklahoma City bombing and the Charlottesville riots. Unfortunately, hate is still going to be here when you have a divided Congress and you have, on one side, you have Republicans who basically follow their leader and they willing to accept the lie and they don't mind, they want to get back to office. And Kevin McCarthy wants to be the speaker. Okay, good luck. But then the other thing is you have black conservatives like Winsome Sears, the lieutenant governor, you have Ben Carson, and even you have Candace Owens, who will be Winston, who will be old just one of these days, just like Winsome Sears, who believe that conservatism, well, I'd rather be a conservatism with a conscience than to believe in the lie. Because they're just followers.
Yeah. Well, Walter, thank you so much. What do you think about what he has to say, Dr. Carter?
Well, I think what Walter is getting at is that this doesn't happen without lots of people being complicit. I mean, there were 147 members of Congress who objected to election results on that day. We have to remember that, right? I mean, it's some of them who've been able to lay low because there have been others who are more high profile, like Ted Cruz and Tommy Tuberville and Hawley out of Missouri, Josh Hawley out of Missouri. But there were other people there, over 100 of them, who objected to the Electoral College count. And if we had a, say, Mike Pence decide to do what they wanted him to do that day, if we had, you know, secretaries of state in places like Georgia and Arizona decide not to do their job that day, there would have been a lot more here. And so I think we have to always remember that our government only functions largely through people agreeing to do their job, right? This is a matter of ceremony, of pomp and circumstance, and all of that other stuff. But it means a lot of our democracy relies on the goodwill, right, and believing that people will do what they say they're going to do, like relinquish the office when they lose an election. But what happens when they don't do that? And we see that here with January 6th. There were lots of people who allowed Donald Trump to follow this line through. So he couldn't have done it alone. And those thousands of people didn't come to the Capitol without prompting. And that doesn't happen in a single day. I don't ever want people to think that what happened on January 6th was just some sort of, you know, spontaneous event. This required planning. This required coordination, right? This required months and months and months of programming, essentially telling people, don't believe in your institution, right? Don't believe that if I lose, it's because I didn't turn out enough voters. No, no, no. The system is rigged. But it only is rigged when I lose, right? And then also rig the rules of the game so that people that we don't want to show up to the polls don't, right? It was a very comprehensive scheme. And I think sometimes we treat January 6th as it's isolated. Because Walter brought up Oklahoma, which is the Oklahoma bombing, which is a domestic terror event. But there were others like 1898 Wilmington Race Riot, right? There was Tulsa. I mean, there have been multiple places where disgruntled whites have been allowed to ride roughshod over multiple processes and institutions in this country with little to no intervention. And this is one of many. And I think the fact that we still have sitting members of Congress sit there with a straight face and say, there's nothing to see here, means our democracy is in a pretty sorry state.
Yeah. Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Marcus, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Marcus. What's on your mind?
Thank you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
I look at it like, January the 6th, it could be seen as a paradigm shift, but in our American history, in some ways, this is just another day in America. You know, white people tearing things up when they don't get their way, not to group them all into one box.
Oh, no, you would never do that.
Oh, I would never do that, but I also have to point out I'm glad you caught the sarcasm there. But I have to point out that there is a bit of a double standard here. Black people who were protesting the unjust murder of George Floyd literally got the poop out of them, beat out of them for protesting in the streets. And we're seeing almost like a real laid-back, nonchalant reaction to this storming of the Capitol, almost as though it wasn't expected, as though it would never get to this point. But it should be expected if you let acts of domestic terrorism go unchecked, eventually they will bite the hand that's been feeding them. And in some ways, they're even turning on, you know, their beloved Donald Trump. The reaction that he got just for getting the COVID shot kind of tells you that, and the look on his face, it lets you know that this kind of hate that he's been milking for most of his presidency, eventually it's going to bite him too. Not that I want to see anything happen to anyone, but got to realize whatever you allow, whatever you consider acceptable, is only acceptable when it's in your favor. He acted like he got cheated out of the election, but by that same logic, can we say he cheated to get in 2016? Ultimately, Joe Biden, I feel like he had to step up and say what he said, because in some ways he is not an innocent party in the direction that America has been going, especially as far as the lack of democracy for Black America. But I can move past that if he can make up for it while he's in office.
Yeah, that certainly remains to be seen. Marcus, thank you so much. I appreciate your input. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are examining what happened to America since the riot at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th, 2021, the insurrection, the attempt to overturn the results of the 2020 election. What do you think? I want to hear your opinions, your inputs, and where do you think America is right now? Again, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I'm going to take a break, but we want to remind you not to forget that you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com. And don't forget to download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone. And you can hear the program live in its entirety. If you're on the phone, that includes Shonda calling from Maryland, DeMarcus just calling in from D.C. Do not hang up. We're going to talk to you. If you're having difficulty getting through, please keep trying. I promise I will take as many phone calls as possible. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's coming up on WHUR. We'll be back in just a few seconds.
So go home. We love you. You're very special. You've seen what happens. You see the way others are treated that are so bad and so evil. I know how you feel. But go home and go home in peace.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue the examination of what happened to America since the riot at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th, 2021. My guests are Dr. Marcia Chatelain, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and author of Franchise, The Golden Arches in Black America, and Dr. Niambi Carter, political science professor at Howard University. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I want to go back to the phone lines real quick. We've got a lot of callers on the line. Let's talk to Shonda. Shonda calling from Maryland. Shonda, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. My thoughts were, and I just commented not long ago in reference to, I just feel that nothing has changed. I also, my thoughts were in reference to Donald Trump inciting this terroristic act and the riot. Why has he not been arrested? My thoughts were, if anyone else had incited this and had this criminal act, was the main leader for this criminal act to happen, they would have been charged and arrested. And does he get a pass because he was the president? That's the question that I ask.
You make a very interesting point. Anyone want to take that one on?
I mean, I think it's impossible to imagine a world where Donald Trump is held accountable for this crime among the many crimes that he probably has committed.
Absolutely.
And so, the Congress is divided on whether or not this was bad. You know, Ted Cruz is getting mad at people for using the word insurrection. So I think if you think about him being held accountable by his colleagues and peers, that doesn't seem like a possibility.
Mm. Yeah, I also think he's really read executive privilege quite broadly and has sort of cried executive privilege even to release of information from the National Archives Committee. So Trump is going to milk his executive power for all it's worth and try to skirt any kind of responsibility. But I think Professor Chatwin is right here, which is there is no will by Republicans in that body, House or Senate, to hold this man accountable.
Hmm. How could that happen when half of the country believes that he still should be president? Let us say, I think this is a very valid argument, Donald Trump is no Richard Nixon, and this is not Richard Nixon's America. It's a very, very different place from Watergate.
In
when Richard Nixon resigned, there was bipartisan support for his impeachment, not only in the House and and the Senate, but also bipartisan support in the House and Senate for his resignation. His own party leadership suggested that he resign before his impeachment could move in the House. But we don't have that kind of America right now. It's a very, very different, very, very different place, Dr. Carter.
Well, absolutely. And I do think, it's clear that it's of the half of his GOP supporters think he should be, or more than half actually, should still be the president. And they want to see him run again. And I think it's partly because he knows what to feed his followers. And he has fed them a steady diet of paranoia, of grievance, of distrust. I mean, he's basically told them America is a wasteland for white people like you. And I know he doesn't necessarily use that language, but he is very much signaling to white people, and not poor whites. I think poor whites have taken an unfair burden for Donald Trump. It's not poor whites. He's talking to middle class and upper middle class white folks. That's who showed up on the Capitol on January 6th. And he's telling them that this country is not your country anymore. And if you want to be saved, you need me, because I alone can fix it. I can make it right for you. And there are many people who want to believe that. But we have to be clear that Donald Trump doesn't come and do all of this work in 4 years. We have started to see this kind of white male grievance, if you will, become part of our political landscape as early as 1968, if not even before. Right. As soon as sort of black people and Native and Asian people become part of this more robust democracy we saw after the passage of the Voting Rights Act, you also saw white politicians start to use race as a cudgel, right? Race was the way that they were going to maintain political power, and it has blossomed into this really ugly thing that we saw sort of January 6th. But it is not the only manifestation of this kind of white racial grievance that we've ever seen. I just think Donald Trump is very good at capitalizing on that sort of angst that was sort of in the twilight of the Obama years and really using that to great effect. And I think, unfortunately, he had a lot of accomplices.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned, Nixon had rebuke from both Republicans and Democrats.
And now we're just like a game of football where it's like, I'm going to root for my team no matter what. And that's really dangerous.
I think that is an excellent point, that analogy of rooting for your team, no matter what, whether your quarterback is vaccinated or not, you're still going to support him. Shonda, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Happy New Year.
I had to throw that in there. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. DeMarcus calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, how you doing, man?
I'm doing fine.
I wanted to say, Ronald Reagan, George Bush, like Donald Trump, what he did is kind of different, but he's not unique. The other two presidents I named, same thing with them. When they have the right people behind them, when the GOP get really behind them, D.C. will become untouchable. They can say and do just about anything. And George Bush still has not been held accountable for what happened with these mass weapons of mass destruction that nobody ever found. Ronald Reagan, his whole presidency. And that's just how it is. It's like, to me, they hold the power. And when they really want to get behind somebody, they're going to get behind them. And jail time, never. He'll never see that. The right people are going to keep him out of jail, and the right people are going to fall for him because he's going to run again. He holds the numbers. He holds the numbers, which means he holds the power. And for some reason, it's like they're so scared of him. But again, everything has fallen around him but him.
Yeah.
People have fallen on the sword for that man.
Yeah. I think you make an interesting point, and President Biden indeed made that point today. DeMarcus, thank you so much for sharing with us. I did want to go back to one point, and I can't remember whether it was Dr. Chatelain or Dr. Carter who made this point, and both of you can talk about this. I find this fascinating, interesting, funny, and I don't mean funny, ha ha, but I think the very first time that I think in modern history that we came really close to questions about the peaceful transfer of power being questioned, the sore loser was the Bush v. Gore debacle that we saw, but this was not that. Al Gore finally acquiesced and he said, "Look, this is America. This is how we do things, and I'm going to step back." But this is really different. This really is a sore loser example. President Biden said today in his speech, and I think this was probably one of the most powerful parts intellectually. This was not an emotional piece, when he said that when Republicans ran the board in other states, except for when it came to the presidential ballot, when Republicans won other seats, and those seats were not questioned in other states. But when it came to the presidential ballot, where President Trump lost, and he said they didn't question that, they only questioned the presidential ballot. That if that's not an example of sore loser, Dr. Chatelain, I don't know what is.
I mean, if only it was about being a sore loser who couldn't, wrangle, incredibly violent people and at least one major news station among many and a series of, newspapers and a media landscape that found him amusing and then found him lucrative, right? So, I mean, you can be a sore loser all you want, but the problem is when you have the heft and the might,
the power.
The entire system of armed citizens who are going to go in for you. And I think that, it's interesting. I really do believe that Trump's deplatforming for Twitter was probably the greatest kind of bruise to his ego. He was a terrible president. He was a bad person. He, oversaw the deaths of hundreds of thousands of Americans. But I think not having Twitter And, you know, he didn't even show up to the corner in Palm Beach. He was supposed to show up and, you know, give his message to his followers. I think that, you know, it's ridiculous. And I think that his deplatforming started to destabilize his ability to have impact. And, you know, the fact that, you know, he had talked about getting vaccinated and boosted, and his followers, like, couldn't, you know, synthesize all that information. So as fragile as his ego is, I think his base is equally fragile. And I think they can be manipulated in a number of directions. And I think the thing that's dangerous is that so many members of the Republican Party want to model their success around him, with the extremism, the fake news, all of this garbage, and they're seeing its effectiveness. And I think they're going to test it out to see who among them can actually rise to power in a similar way.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Robert, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Robert. What's on your mind?
Hi, thanks for having my call. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
I want to talk about police officers. Now, you know, even though police officers, you know, well, they shoot black folks in the back and all that kind of stuff, how do you have a police force when you have people that are coming at you with poles, with fire extinguishers and everything else? They beat your colleagues within an inch of their life, and you have a gun and you don't shoot. What were you sworn to protect? What do you get paid to protect? What were you trained to protect? And you don't pull out anything to defend yourself. You have one person up on Capitol Hill, man had common sense. You shoot. How do you, and he shot that woman, you know, she had no business being up there in the first place. But you see one of your colleagues being squeezed in a door. You don't pull out anything to protect his life. You know, whenever I go up on Capitol Hill now, I can't, you know, I can't trust them. They don't even protect themselves. They can't, you know, why didn't they shoot? That's what I want to know. Maybe I know your panelists can't answer that, but when you have all the firepower in the world, you stand there in the line, you shoot off a few rounds, people will retreat.
Well,
it can be mopped up.
So, you know, I was going to bring this up, and I'm so glad that you brought this up, Robert.
I had to. I don't hear anybody talking about it. You got a gun, you shoot it.
But
you don't run from anybody.
But this is so. Let me put this in full context. So, where are you from originally, Robert?
Chicago.
You're from Chicago.
Right,
but hold on. But here's the context. And this is why this question is so important, because Dr. Carter is a native of the DMV. We went to the same high school, okay? Dr. Chatlin, I don't know where you're originally.
I'm from Chicago. Also,
you're from
Robert.
Chicago, okay? So let me. So this is a Dr. Carter Harold Fisher conversation.
Okay,
because you Chicago folks are not from the DMV, so you don't understand. So let me put this in the context, and I know Dr. Carter will understand. As an intellectual and as a person who was raised in the DMV, Dr. Carter, what did we do when we were kids? We went down to the National Mall. We went to the Capitol. We went to the Smithsonian, right?
Absolutely.
That's what we did. And one of the things that we learned as we were kids when we visited the Capitol was you did what the Capitol Police told you. Why? Because if you crossed the line with the Capitol Police, what would happen?
They would shoot you.
They would shoot you. And so 1 year ago, when I was reporting on this, and watching these rabble-rousers, these insurrectionists, before they breached the Capitol, I was saying to Autumn Joy on WHUR that once they breach the doors, those people are going to get shot. Because that is the way that it was. I cannot tell you how horribly surprised I was that it didn't happen.
But you know what, Harold? I think what Robert is getting at is that, you know, you have federal law enforcement who perhaps see these people as themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
I think one of the conversations we had within our community, and we've probably all heard versions of this, if those people were black,
yes,
and they had acted in that fashion, they would have been shot dead on the steps.
they wouldn't even made it into the chamber, right? They wouldn't have gotten as far as Ashley Babbitt, that we would have been dead before we even really attempted to get into that building. And I think, you know, this is, like you said, we can't divine an answer, right, about why. I don't know if it was just the sheer force, just being overwhelmed, right, that even if they shot 10 times, that there were just so many people to keep coming, that perhaps this may have made it worse. I have no clue.
Yeah.
But it is certainly the case that we saw police exercise an extraordinary amount of restraint on that day. And,
well, some
you know,
of-
whether you're... I'm sorry.
No, go ahead and finish, Dr. Carter, and then Dr. Chatwin.
We've seen people in rather benign situations end up dead. And here you have acts of aggression, people coming at you, trying to get to members, threatening death, and nothing happens, relatively speaking. And I think
like
that left many black people very cold.
That's what you get paid to do. You're supposed to...
Hold on, Robert. Go ahead, Dr. Carter.
Oh, I'm finished.
Dr. Chatwin.
Oh, I mean, one of the things that was really clear, you know, there was some body camera, you know, footage of people saying, I know you're upset. I agree with you. I know that this is hard. But, you know, there was a moment where some, you know, of the police force was trying to, you know, chat it up. And there were also indications that, you know, people knew where everything was. Most people who did not work on the Hill don't know where the offices are, whose offices are where. I mean, this was not a local crowd, so they had to have a sense of the lay of the land. But more importantly, they are people who are also former military. Some of these people are also police officers. Some of these people know when to, you know, how to spot their own in terms of people who have sympathies. And so everything about that day was set up for that mob to win. And if you read people like Kathleen Ballou, who talks about, you know, the relationship between the military and extremists and the police force, it's like these people are in very similar social circles, mm-hmm. online and in person. And so they were primed to be successful that day. And, you know, their behavior once they got inside, you know, told you everything you needed to know about their certainty that they wouldn't be shot and killed.
I will say this, that you had the Capitol Police, and I agree with everything that Dr. Chatwin and Dr. Carter said. But I do remember quite clearly that the Secret Service, who had barricaded themselves inside the House chambers with their sidearms drawn at that door as they were guarding the members of Congress.
Doing their job.
Doing their job. I do believe, don't know, I can only tell you what I believe, if the insurrectionists had gotten to the door where the Secret Service was, I do not believe that the Secret Service would have hesitated to pull the trigger on those people.
Let me tell you, when part of my social circle, if they wanted to turn against me, I had a gun, believe me, I would use it. Police officers should have had the intelligence. Look, again, they were trained to protect the people there and the property there. They were sworn to do that. They get paid to do that. They did not do that.
Well, I would argue that, you know, particularly the black officer who has been praised over and over.
He should have shot.
He could.
You have a gun. You don't run from a sailor.
Yeah, but he could have.
You don't lead them up into your territory.
And I think, and this is something that we can debate, but this is a thing where he used his brain instead of force, and in doing so was able to lead that crowd away from where members of the House were, where he was able to lead other members of the Senate, directing them away from the crowds. And not only did he protect members of Congress, but he also prevented loss of life from the insurrectionists. I think we can debate whether or not he should have used deadly force. He did not. and he was praised for his intellect in not doing that. But Robert, shout out to the folks from Chicago. Thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. So where are we? Where do we go from here, Dr. Chatelain? It's been a year. Joe Biden said what he said, and we are now in the midst of this January 6th investigation. We have the midterms. We have an exodus of Democrats and the threat that Democrats could lose the House. Indeed, Democrats could lose their tenuous hold on the Senate. Where do we go from here as it relates to the investigation?
Well, there are a few things. First, I encourage everyone to watch tonight's PBS Preserving Democracy, Pursuing a More Perfect Union, a two-hour documentary about the historical threads of January 6th, that it wasn't just one day in American history, that we've seen versions of this type of backlash and this type of rebellion before. I think the thing that I could say is just people have to remain vigilant. We have to take these things seriously. And, it isn't just talk on Twitter, and it isn't just people posting misinformation on Facebook. The algorithm and the technology makes it more efficient and more effective in galvanizing people to do these types of things. So I think that, particularly people in white communities have to be very aware that this is a real presence in their communities. And I think everyone broadly, needs to also do what they can to try to slow down the lies and to participate fully. But, I think that we are in a really difficult place because we have to push politicians who agree that this was wrong further. I think I'm glad Biden made his speech, but I wish Biden would have led from a place where this kind of conciliatory behavior that he tells Democrats, we're going to be relentless. We're not going to settle for a kind of moderate or tepid approach. And, I wish he also said he was going to cancel student debt, because I think ultimately we are on the brink of a real financial crisis coming out of COVID. And what we don't need is a greater sense of economic inequality in this country while we also have the grievance machine working overtime. This is, again, another thing that we have to be really, really careful about.
Dr. Carter, where do we go from here? What do you think we're going to see moving forward 1 year after this insurrection?
Well, I think that's still unfolding. As I was saying earlier, I think not having more martyrs for the January 6th deniers on that day is probably a good thing. I think we have to be very clear that we can't always assume there's going to be another election. I think lots of us have assumed that there's always another chance to get it right. But what we saw on January 6th is our democracy is very tenuous. We are really teetering here. And the fact that we have, like you said, these members of the elected, right, our elected officials who can't even muster the nerve to say that something that was objectively and clearly wrong was wrong, tells us how dangerous the times are. And we're not always looking for, the crazy people in the corner. Many of the people that showed up that day are not members of the Proud Boys or the Oath Keepers or any of these right-wing groups. They are regular people. They are our neighbors. So we have to be ever, ever careful to make these sort of gross mischaracterizations about who was there and get really clear about that. We also have to take seriously domestic threats. We are still externalizing a lot of our security and thinking about our threats as coming from abroad. But we are not necessarily, when we do security clearances for jobs like we see with the Capitol Police and others, asking people about their affiliations or looking at what they like and don't like on these social media posts and things like that. It's not enough to post hoc tell these people you shouldn't do this and then you maybe lose a job. This is dangerous, and I think we cannot rest easy
on the fact that these institutions are going to save us, because these people are shameless, right? Many of the people who are propagating this lie are shameless. They don't care. They just want to win elections, and they can continue to score political points. But as your caller said earlier, you can't put this genie back in the bottle. You can't control it once it's sort of out there in the ether. And I think it's going to be a lot worse before it gets a lot better. And if we cannot as a nation say, this was a bad thing, this did not happen or should not have happened, we're, I think, in for a world of hurt. And I also just would say people should read Dr. Chatelain's work, because I loved both of her books.
I think before we go, I think we should also remember that those people who were there but did not go inside have gone back to their communities, and they are running for town councils, city councils, county commissions. They are also running for those obscure boards that control the count of the votes. Mm-hmm. And you know, and I think those are the quiet dangers that a lot mm-hmm. of people are not really familiar with. And I think that when you have not federal judges, but lower court judges that make decisions for counties and states where these issues don't rise to the level of federal decisions that affect the bread and butter issues in your immediate community, because often, you know, we don't vote in these midterm or lower elections. Those are the kinds of things that can really get us in trouble. And I think it is the mustard seed problem, the little tiny problems that don't rise to the level of an insurrection. And hopefully we can nip these things in the bud before it gets to that level. Dr. Marcia Chatelain, I want to thank you so much for joining this conversation. It's good to have you on the program. Also, I was remiss in not mentioning Dr. Niambi Carter's book, American While Black, African Americans, Immigration, and the Limits of Citizenship. I don't want her throwing a snowball at me as I leave work. Thank you both for joining the conversation. Be safe.
Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum for this Thursday, January 6th, 2022. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.